Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
Hello and welcome to the Catholic Nerds podcast, your undisputed source for quality Catholic nerdery. This is Scott,
Mary,
Cody,
Colby.
Join us for a dispute of multiversal proportions as we settle once and for all which is better, Marvel or DC. This is only possible because joining us today is master Catholic apologist and debater, Mr. Trent Horn. Welcome to the show, Trent.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here. I'm excited to talk about this. This is fun. I just got done finishing today. Actually, I did an interview with an atheist on Infinity and the Kalam argument. So it's fun just to talk about fun stuff. And it's late at night too. So I think I have enough brain power to talk about that, but it'll be fun. So,
well, yeah. We need you to like tie your arm behind your back and, the mental version of that.
Be kind to us.
Don't let Scott fool you. He is a true nerd in the real sense.
Yeah.
Very good.
Now we've built up our Titanic struggle pretty big here, but we're gonna need you to take it easy on us.
Okay.
Not that we're all ganging up at all.
Even though you've clearly given us the high ground of Marvel, I guess. Not to throw shade. Sorry.
Shots fired.
So he's your team DC.
Well, It really depends on the medium and the format, but
sure.
I think in general I prefer more of the epic and almost even cosmic elements of DC. Comparisons I've made in the past is that the DC comics is sort of like the stories of ancient Greek mythology come to life, basically, that it's the gods have come down among us. There's the DC video game, right? Injustice 2, Gods Among Us,
yes.
Right? That's the DC characters. They are these larger than life figures going up against larger than life foes. So I guess the elements in Marvel that I've enjoyed are those things that parallel that in DC. So, for example, I was really jazzed to see the trailer for Doctor Strange 2, The Multiverse of Madness. Yeah, and the fact that Spider-Man No Way Home and the Loki series have opened the door to the multiverse, because the multiverse was a huge thing in DC Comics. I mean, it got so bad that they had to reset everything in 1985 with Crisis on Infinite Earths, because of just all the nonsense that was going on with that for continuity. So I'm really excited for that. What was the last movie? Maybe it was Shang-Chi, I guess, was the last Marvel movie I saw. Oh, no, it would have been Spider-Man. Is that Sony Marvel? Yeah. Whatever.
Right. Sony Marvel. It's Marvel.
Yeah. So, and I bought tickets well ahead of time, well worth it. It's hard now, though, that like I'm getting into it a little bit, looking at the trailer. Like, I probably should have just not watched the trailer, but I can't help it, because now I am thinking ahead of like things they're going to do in Doctor Strange 2, and like they might include what's called the Illuminati. And so that would be the multiversal council of like Reed Richards, Charles Xavier, another Iron Man, that the multiverse will be represented there. So when it gets big like that, I like that. But I don't like the episode, the comics about when the Fantastic Four went on unemployment. That is a real storyline. I appreciate why is Spider-Man so popular? It's because his comics and his stories, why is he such a popular property? It is because he is the most relatable. You can't really relate to Batman. You can't relate to Superman. You can relate to Spider-Man, though. And so I give them props for that relatability, but with the way I like these stories, I like him just to be above and beyond,
Yeah. I think that is why, I think you hit kind of right on why more people are drawn to Marvel versus DC.
Or at least at the moment
is because of the relatability. Like Marvel, it seems that it's always something that, I could actually see that happening.
Well, look at the first Marvel movie, the MCU, to start out to do their reboot to get things working in 2008 with Iron Man.
Mm-hmm.
It's just here's a guy who made weapons and he feels bad about making weapons. So he makes a weapon to stop the people who have the bad weapons. Right. We're not doing some crazy multiverse. Eventually we get there, but it's like,
it wasn't completely improbable. It was potentially possible.
Ben Kingsley was the enemy in what, Iron Man 2, 3? Which one was it?
Ben Kingsley. Oh, in Iron Man 3, he plays the Mandarin.
I mean, that completely destroyed Gandhi for me, but that's also a foreseeable kind of thing that they dragoon this actor into being this bad guy.
Right. Well, that was very controversial.
And he wasn't really a bad guy.
No, and that was very controversial in Iron Man 3 because you think, oh, he's going to fight the Mandarin. The Mandarin was a very, the Mandarin was really like, maybe kind of like the Lex Luthor to Tony Stark, almost, in the comics.
Not to be confused with the Mandrill.
Right.
Which is one of the worst villains ever.
Well, we'll get to that soon.
We'll have to get to
but, that. But maybe Justin Hammer. No, Justin Hammer's a goon. He's a rival. He's a goon in the movies. He's a rival. But really, when you think of like who was the person that really went up against Tony, it was the fact that the Mandarin had magic and so was able to really counter Tony's technology in the comics, and he has rings he could do anything he needed to with, and blah blah blah. And so I remember people being really mad, like, that's not the Mandarin. And it was funny how they retconned that in Shang-Chi, by bringing Ben Kingsley back and revealing the real Mandarin. So I thought that was neat that they did that. But even there, that's where you're right. They tried to keep it still grounded, but eventually Iron Man creating this large universe, his armor becomes this magical nanotech that can do anything.
Right. And that part didn't even get explained. Did they just kind of brush over, I use your nanotechnology?
Is it?
Yeah. I guess I'll be the lone wolf, because I would actually argue that Batman is probably the most relatable superhero because he is the most human in a way. Iron Man to an extent, because he was just a rich guy that had the technology, but there
sounds like you're describing Batman or Iron Man.
The same guy, Iron Man. Same guy, different universe.
I would also argue with Batman, he lives with the principle of subsidiarity. He served his own community to an extent.
Right.
So that's what I'll argue.
He ends up with the Justice League doing all kinds of crazy shenanigans, the Super Friends, Justice League. No, I'll push back on that, because I give you that he doesn't have powers. Like, Spider-Man has these powers.
Right.
But Spider-Man, the way he acts, he acts like a 16-year-old or a 20-year-old who has had these powers dropped in his lap, and he's trying to figure out what to do. Like, if you read the actual, like, bio of Bruce Wayne, he has, like, 4 doctorates, has trained in 15 different martial, like, he has like a doctorate in chemistry, a doctorate in, you know, all these other, like, criminology and forensics. He's trained in 15. I just started training. I did a martial art tonight, and he decided when he was 8 years old, he's going to master 15 different fighting styles. And, you know, it's like, it becomes a bit, you know, and then, but that's the thing, why he's not, the reason Batman's not relatable is like when you and I are in a jam, we're like, oh no, what do we do? But Batman was always like, I had a plan for this. You know? I counted on that.
I read recently, is Flashpoint, where you have Thomas Wayne as Batman?
So Flashpoint is that, I think that was a 2013 comic series, comic run. That was when the Flash goes back to save his mother, Nora Allen.
Destroying everything.
And in doing so, he alters the past in large, significant ways because, you know, he kind of creates like a time quake, if you will. So he sends Superman's pod off course, and he prevents, instead of Thomas and Martha Wayne dying in Crime Alley, it is Bruce Wayne who dies in Crime Alley, which leads Thomas Wayne to become a murderous Batman, and Martha Wayne to become the Joker, because he has a psychotic break. The animated film is pretty solid. It is a pretty solid adaptation of the comic source material. Not all of, like, I'm trying to think, what was the one? There was a recent DC
basically
animated
the
film.
Biff Tanner of the Batman world at that point, because he owns all these casinos.
Yeah. If Biff Tanner went around, killing Joker goons and stuff like that. No, there was a DC animated adaptation I was super it was Injustice. It was the DC animated version of Injustice. They did that movie. And I was ready to watch it. I told my wife, like, I'm going to be up watching Injustice. If you want to watch with me, I know you won't. So, but then I looked it up. And I saw the reviews on Amazon, like 2 stars. I was like, uh-oh. Then I go online. And it's just an absolute train wreck. It tried to cram like 5 years worth of story and leaves out the good stuff, botches things. It's just absolutely awful. But the DC animated Flashpoint is pretty good. I showed that even to Laura and that
brings up a very interesting point to talk about whenever we get in more into it. Well, not Flashpoint, but the idea of the comics versus
the
cinematic universe.
Yeah.
Right. Because I mean, arguably the Marvel Cinematic Universe is like the best cinematic universe there is. Right.
Oh, I mean, interesting, but I don't know. It's funny. It's like, it's that and like the Monsterverse from the early 20th century.
Universal Studios Monsters?
Yeah, because that was the original one with the Mummy and
Wolfman.
They all lived in this. They all lived in the same universe. So with Abbott and Costello.
Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Yeah, they tried their best to resurrect it, and it just wasn't going to happen. So Marvel figured it out. They're like, oh, we have a plan and we're going to have a plan for the next 10 and 15 years. And DC is like, quick, do something.
React.
DC, they're making millions of dollars and they're trusted with these decisions and they're just so bad at it. So, I mean, it's interesting.
I will say there are two DC movies that I really enjoyed that I can think of. Actually three now. But Aquaman was actually enjoyable. I did enjoy Aquaman. And then
it wasn't Aquaman. It was Aqua Bro. That's why it's enjoyable.
Probably. Yeah, probably. But then the first Wonder Woman, that was actually an entertaining movie.
And we had such high hopes for the second one.
We really did.
And then it devastated us.
Oh, I didn't even go see it. I read the reviews. There are a lot of list of movies that I just have not bothered to see.
Yeah.
Star Wars Episode 9 is one. Wonder Woman 1984. I just don't have time for movies that are bad. I used to have time for bad movies, but now it's like, I just want to watch things that are good. Here's the thing with DC. They should not. I don't know. No, they you can't be like Zack Snyder, make a dark, gritty superhero universe. No, people don't want that. You could take a different tone with it. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't have to be. We already had Dark and Gritty. That was Watchmen. And Watchmen was a good movie for what it was, for what it was trying to do. But with these properties, they're not meant to be dark and gritty. But you can play them in a different way than Marvel. That's the thing that DC never learned, is that, they're like, well, we're not going to be Marvel. You don't have to be Marvel, but you don't have to be this like depressing dreck. And a good example of that would be probably the best Superman film I've ever seen is a DC animated movies are actually pretty good, which is ironic that like the DC animated, they get right and the live action, they don't. And that would be a film called All-Star Superman based on the comic run, All-Star Superman.
Oh, and, I've never seen that one.
Oh, it's great. And so in that comic run and in the movie, it's about Superman is dying because Lex Luthor has tricked him into overdosing on solar radiation. And the entire movie is just about Superman setting his affairs in order. That's it. And now there's fights and there's monsters and crazy stuff. And the movie feels a little rushed. You're like, suddenly this monster solar computer comes out of nowhere. You're like, what was this? because it's hard to take a comic run and put it into a movie, but it's good. And what I liked about it was you can look up right now, look up the cover, All-Star Superman. The cover for All-Star Superman, it shows Superman just sitting on a cloud, thinking.
Like and Mary Poppins.
It's a great image. And I forget who it was. Morrison. Yeah, I mean, there it is right there. And what's great about it is that one of the creators of the series, they interviewed him, and he said he saw this guy at a comic book convention just sitting like that, either dressed as Superman or someone else. He described it as almost like a shaman-like experience. And what is neat about it, he said, is normally when you want to depict Superman, you show him rippling with muscles, standing, his chest puffed out, bullets bouncing off of him. But if you were truly invulnerable, you just relax.
Yeah.
You would just sit. You'd sit on a cloud and just relax because you're invulnerable and nothing can hurt you. And that makes it neat to see the invulnerable man, what he's truly vulnerable to. So that's a great one. I haven't seen it yet, but there's another one based on the comic run Superman Man of Tomorrow, or Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow, which I heard that movie was actually pretty, that film was actually really good, that series. Because people say, you can't do a good Superman movie. Yes, you can.
Yes, you can. I mean, I grew up with the Salkind brothers, you know, Superman 1 and 2, I guess the Richard Donner.
Oh, the Donner movies, yeah.
Yeah.
And those are great because it's interesting there because that just focuses on, you have to understand who Superman is, that you understand the rules that he plays by, the hope that he inspires. Another good animated film that gets this well is Superman versus the Elite. It's where Superman faces off against these four vigilantes, and the public turns and supports the vigilantes because they execute supervillains. And the public says, well, yeah, Superman puts them in jail. They just get out again and they kill people. Like, Superman's a wuss. And then Superman acts like he's gone crazy at the end. Like, you want to really see me not be a wuss? And helps people to see, because Superman is all about pulling his punches. Like, mm-hmm. he knows he could turn some people into jelly if you punch them. And, you know, so that's what he's concerned about. But yeah, in the Snyderverse, it's just Mopey Man. It's not Superman, it's Mopey Man.
I think it was that, even...
That's one of the things I actually don't... Go ahead.
I'll say one of the more recent ones like that made, it was at the end whenever they... You know, he's fighting Zod and, you know, lasering his face off. It was like this massive shock because everybody's like, well, Superman doesn't kill people, right?
Right.
So it's like this massive twist and who his image is that, it was kind of like a, it's like, what was the goal with him doing that, you know?
Right. It's like, oh, I'm subverting expectations. So no, you're not. Not unless you haven't built yourself up to it or you're trying to make a particular point. It's still better than when Superman and Lois made out in Metropolis amidst... It'd be like if I rescued someone at 9/11 and I made out with this person while the firefighters are running around, all these millions of people are dead. And now I will say this with Batman versus Superman is not a good movie. It's a bad movie. Yep. But what was sad about that one is I had high hopes for that actually going into it. Mm-hmm. And the first scene is actually pretty good. And that is the scene when Bruce Wayne arrives in Gotham and is trying to go to the Wayne Tech Tower in Metropolis. And he's like, I gotta call Jack. I'm like, who the heck is Jack? It's supposed to be Lucius Fox. Whatever. Really? Who's Jack? I don't know, and I don't care. But he's driving there, and what's cool about that scene is, like, Ben Affleck, everyone's running away from the collapsing buildings, and he's running towards it because Bruce Wayne is a disguise. Batman is who he really is. Mm. Bruce Wayne is the that's the difference between the two. Clark Kent is who Superman really is. He is a bumbling Smallville farm boy. That is who he is. And Superman is a disguise he puts on when he fights space monsters and bald millionaires, you know. But Batman, that's who he, since he was 8 years old, that's who he is. And that's a disguise that he wears. There's actually a nod to this in the third Dark Knight film. What is it, Batman? What's the third one? Dark Knight Rises. Right. Where he's dancing with Anne Hathaway, Catwoman. And he's like, you're supposed to wear a costume. What costume are you wearing? He's like, billionaire, playboy, philanthropist.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. That is the costume he wears. Because that's not who he really is. So seeing that in the beginning when he's like rushing in there and seeing this, the contempt he has for the space god that destroyed this city in the blink of an eye. That was awesome. And then it all falls apart because Lex Luthor is being played by Daffy Duck. Wait, the guy, what was the guy? There was the guy
Jesse Eisenberg. Yeah.
Right.
Here's how you could have fixed that in
the
one
social
second.
Network Lex Luthor.
Mm-hmm. No, that's it. If I was the director, I would say to Jesse Eisenberg, like, well, how do I play Lex Luthor? You're Mark Zuckerberg.
Yes.
You're not Mark Zuckerberg pretending to be Lex Luthor. Just be Mark Zuckerberg. There you go. Because that's basically who Lex Luthor is.
Now, there was a line that Jesse Eisenberg said as Lex Luthor that I was proud to see the villain saying.
Hmm.
I've got here. I figured out way back, if God is all powerful, he cannot be all good.
Hmm.
And if he is all good, then he cannot be all powerful. I appreciate that coming out of the villain's mouth and not the hero's mouth.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, that he's, you know, disparaging this. And it was weird because it was like, well, what is his motivation? He has this weird religious fixation, or he's jealous of Superman. You just don't understand it. A better Lex Luthor villain plan, and it's just a dumb plan, and you can't, and nobody can summarize what his plan is from Batman v Superman. It's impossible because it's a dumb plan. A better plan, if you were going out, if you're Lex Luthor, is not to beat Superman by getting a monster to punch him. It's to get Superman to embarrass himself so people turn against him. And Lex Luthor already thought three steps ahead of that. Because that's, I mean, Superman has all these godlike powers. What can Lex Luthor do? Well, he's like one of the smartest people on Earth. That is what he can do. And is always beating Superman. And they just squandered it. But
yeah, maybe, well, they, you lived in Smallville. Him. Have you, I guess, were you a Smallville fan, or did you just kind of reference it?
Oh, I watched some. That was back in the day for me. I saw some of it, but I mean, there are 10 seasons. I couldn't get, they did trick me to, not trick me. They really lured me into the Flash, the Arrowverse crossover series, because they brought right. Tom Welling into that. The Arrowverse is an interesting one too.
Tom Welling's Buckaroo Banzai, right?
I think so.
He should just been Buckaroo Banzai.
Yeah. But the Arrowverse is the interesting, that is the error in the opposite direction, where the Snyderverse goes to dark. The Arrowverse turns into just, they're not even, it's just villain of the week, light right. and fluffy, just teen drama.
Right.
That was a hard one for me to see the downfall, because my wife and I started watching, we started with Arrow season 2. Then we watched season 1. And then the Flash debuted the next season, because Flash was introduced in Arrow 2. I think it was Arrow 2. I think it was Arrow 2. Yeah, it's when Barry shows up. And then we started watching the Flash. And to me, the best seasons are Arrow season 2 and Flash season 1. And then it's just downhill after that. And it's so, the stock is so low. It's unbelievable how bad it's gotten.
Yeah.
I don't even watch. I don't even think I watch crossover.
I tried to get into it with Arrowverse, and I think I watched like the first season, and I was just like,
"Of what?
I don't feel Arrow. Just I don't feel like I need to continue this." You know?
Yeah, it's an acquired taste. I thought they one and two, especially season two, they did a good job. The flashback storytelling was interesting. I think that. They did a good job there. I think the Flash, I really gave them credit for who is the name of the guy who is plays Eobard Thawne in season yeah. one. He was also on, was that Chuck? Whoever it was. Yeah. Kavanaugh? Tom Kavanaugh? I think it was Tom Kavanaugh.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah. The whole Reverse season Flash. Season one of the Flash, it was what was really good about it was you had the greatest villain, the Flash's greatest villain, the Reverse Flash. Mm-hmm. And you knew he was bad at the beginning, but you couldn't quite figure out exactly why or what his motivation was. And that kept you moving through the season, even though a lot of the episodes were kind of predictable villain of the week.
Yeah, little Archie.
Yeah. That's the problem with the Flash is he's an incredibly overpowered character. So unless you really nerf him, it's hard. That's the joke. It's like, what happened? He got away. What do you mean he got away? In one of the seasons, you ran to China and back in 4 seconds. What do you mean he got away? So that when you have such an overpowered, it's like Superman. When you have such an overpowered character,
yeah,
you had to figure out is the weakness for, you know, a villain to exploit. It's hard to, but with the Reverse Flash and what he was doing, I thought it was, it was just a good arc with all of that. But then after that it became so repetitive when it's like, you're stuck in a formula. That's when a lot of these shows like series go bad, when mm-hmm. it's just like the writers, it's the same with any, like the Simpsons or anything else. The writers just say, oh, well, we've got the formula. We'll just slot in new things for the formula. But it's like, well, we can tell it's the same. You have a new villain, but it's the same story arc we've heard before. You got to try something new a little.
Marvel has done a good job of doing something new with
yes.
series.
Oh, yeah. with the MCU, with the films, they've learned from mistakes, and they've allowed directors to have freedom to make different kinds of movies, and that's to their credit. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, and then when they launched into their series on Disney Plus with WandaVision and Loki and Falcon yeah. and the Winter Soldier and Hawkeye,
Yeah. Like, I'm not going to talk about the last two, but
yeah. Which that was hard.
Yeah. I didn't, I didn't watch Falcon and the Winter Soldier. I'm like, eh.
Yeah. But we like Hawkeye.
I'm a big fan of Falcon as Captain America.
Yeah.
Right. I love that concept. I love that line. Right.
Yeah.
But
the series kind of felt like a waste of time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Hawkeye, I was like, I want more Hawkeye in my Hawkeye.
Well, I'm excited.
We liked it though.
I can see that. I enjoyed it as a Christmas movie. You know.
Here's a conceptual question. I wonder if, you know, the Marvel stuff has been more successful because of the platform they have being acquired by Disney. And it just makes you think of a different analogy, but like, you know, they have a lot more resource, a lot more capital to be able to take risk in those ways. Whereas DC does not, right? They're more focused on just the blockbuster movies they have to make.
But
I'm just thinking like another example was like totally different universe, right? But the show The Boys, that was pitched to Sony years ago, right? And they tried their darndest to make it work and they never could. And then it was repitched to Amazon, which has a lot more different resource and different approach. Right. They took an innovative. Yeah, they took an innovative approach and then it's more successful. So I'm wondering if
freedom, though, when you do a series, you have freedom to do things like you couldn't make a WandaVision movie. It'd be too weird. People wouldn't go see it. But the series is weird, but it's enough where it's a niche to get people into it. So I don't buy that, though, because Warner Brothers has deep pockets. They could have done a DC if they had. And what they should have done is they could have just started with Wonder Woman. You start with Wonder Woman, that paves the way, and then you build up other, and really you start with that, and then because they learned their lessons the hard way, because then after that, you're right. I liked Aquaman, I liked Shazam, I liked Wonder Woman.
I forget that Shazam's part of the DC.
I know, because it feels like a totally different movie because they were allowed to take risks. It's not the Mobiverse, but it's also not Marvel as much. Either. So it's like they could have built up their own Justice League by doing one character at a time.
Mm-hmm. But they kind of jumped the gun.
Yeah. Almost. And then tie everything together. And then they could have done other things. I mean, this still might be on the table, but I think it'd be cool if they could do a Batman Beyond movie and have Michael Keaton as old Batman.
That would be awesome.
And that's the obvious casting. I think they're thinking of that. Well, there might. Well, I think they're going to have Michael Keaton in The Flash, I think. In that.
We still have Jack Nicholson and Danny DeVito around, too.
Right. and that's what I was going to say. Like,
right?
Warner Brothers did a really good job with the Batman trilogy with Christian Bale. Right.
Yes, like just that Val Kilmer.
That was fantastic.
At least the first two movies. The third is a lot. I mean, it's just like Return of the Jedi. It happens in the third movie. Yeah.
Right. But they built up support. Yeah. They got a following with those movies and they did a really good job. And then they threw it away. Exactly.
I stopped that with Bane. I lived in the darkness.
Well, and isn't that like, for me, the DC movies, a lot of times the villain, like you've said, their motivation is a little like vague, and also like their actions seem not to have a coherent like cause and effect. I don't know, for us or for me at least, when we'd be watching the DC movies, I'd be like, I don't totally understand why people are doing what they're doing.
Right. Yeah.
It's that's vague, not so much of a problem.
Or it's cliche. Like,
yeah. Or it's cliche.
Like,
or they're
Justice
just crazy.
In Justice League, Steppenwolf could have been any CGI bad guy in a video game.
Yeah. Right.
Same goals, same look. The only ones that are interesting, like the movies that we like think about it. You don't like Justice League. You don't like Batman versus Superman, but like Shazam, Aquaman,
Suicide Squad. We haven't really talked about that.
Oh yeah.
That's the third one that I like.
Yeah.
That I was going to mention earlier.
Well, I've thought on that, but like, let's take like Aquaman and Shazam. It's like, oh, I can understand the villain's motivation here. One is a family. One is a little bit like Black Panther. It's a family dynamic wanting to have royal control, blah, 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 blah. And then Shazam is someone who's always had a bit of a inferiority complex who wants power because they were bullied even as a small child. No, that's good. I mean, it's not groundbreaking villain stuff.
Right.
Right.
Suicide Squad's interesting. Are you talking about the original Suicide Squad or the Suicide Squad?
The Harley, the Will's.
Yeah, there are two.
The Margot Robbie.
All right. Margot Robbie's in both.
She's in both, yeah.
All right. So I actually enjoyed both of them. Hmm. Okay. I would say that I probably enjoyed the first one more.
Hmm.
And the second one was fun, but it was also kind of, it was really kooky and out there.
Oh yeah. Know? Well, anytime you have giant starfish. Croc. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. But the first one,
but they wanted,
really,
and that's the thing, to make these movies, you have to kind of go for gold with,
yeah,
with all that. So,
and I think they did a decent job of putting together a team of people that you don't really know.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But they didn't try to build up anybody's story, really. And so it was just like, here's this team of people.
Well, the movie was edited by a movie trailer company. Like, you know,
okay. Well,
that's why it feels so weird when you watch it.
Yeah.
But yeah. And I think with DC movies, for me at least, there's always kind of a feel of, there's a lot of psychological issues. like it just feels like everyone has psychological issues. And in Marvel, and maybe that's relatable because we're humans and we have psychological issues, but it feels like a lot. Like,
I think,
like,
it's
really
just lazy writing.
Out there,
it's lazy writing to be like, oh, well, the bad guy's crazy. That's
he's
why
crazy.
He's
crazy. Right.
But that's, whereas, like, well, with Marvel, it's like, that's why Thanos is great. He's not crazy. He's just evil.
Right.
Yep.
And to me, Marvel feels more like the culture of death versus the culture of life a lot of times. That it's not, oh, they're just insane. It's like, here's people who have bought into the idea that death is better than life, or that there's too many humans.
Means, yeah, that the ends justify intrinsically evil means.
Yep.
Right.
Thanos is trying to achieve a good, even if it's messy.
Right.
Killmonger is trying to achieve a good for people, even if it's going to require violence.
Right.
Yep.
Let's talk about what would be between DC and Marvel. What is the more Catholic conception of the universe, the more pro-life? I would love to hear what you have to say about that.
Yeah, I don't. Well, it depends what you mean by Catholic conception. When I try to think of, like, characters that are Catholic, the only ones I can really think of are from the Marvel universe.
Yeah,
the two biggest would be like Daredevil and Nightcrawler.
Mm-hmm.
And they're done very well in that regard. So I think I was showing my kids the X-Men animated series. Actually, they finished watching it all on
That's love it. Plus.
I bought
shout out to Cal Dodd.
What?
Yeah.
So shout out to Cal Dodd. He was the voice of Wolverine in the animated series. We did an interview with him.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. It was awesome. Childhood dream come true.
Hey, bub.
Exactly. We also interviewed Chris Potter, who is Gambit, who's also Catholic.
I think he was a Canadian doing his best to do a Cajun accent.
Oh,
right.
Yeah, mon ami. There's plenty of gators in the bayou.
Sorry.
It's actually not that far off from
spot on.
But when I showed the kids, I remember like 15 years ago, I ordered on eBay bootlegged copies of those episodes.
Yeah, you couldn't find
DVD.
Them forever.
No, you couldn't. So I had the DVDs and I was like, guys, check this out. I actually have the old X-Men animated series, and then not all of them worked, but like it was still enough. and now my kids, they blasted through all of it in like, you know, 2 weeks. But I thought that was neat to go back and watch it with them and talk to them about it. But there was the episode where they introduced Nightcrawler, and Wolverine's having a crisis of faith, and Nightcrawler helps him to understand God's purpose. Like, why would God make me mutants? You know, why would he make mutants? It's like, God has a plan for all of us, Logan. Yeah, you know, it's just like, but that was, I mean, I was like, and I told my wife, I was like, see, this is the 90s when you can have an episode of Saturday morning cartoons that talks about God and you should believe in him. Now it
you have Wolverine kneeling in front of a crucifix.
Oh man,
the
final was
shot.
Awesome.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And that's actually one of the things we talked with Cal Dodd about, was that scene.
Oh yeah.
And
that was his favorite episode.
That was his favorite episode.
Yeah.
Wow. That's really, now I'm geeking out. You guys got the chance to do that. I met, when I was at Comic-Con before the pandemic, I met Larry Houston, who was one of the, producers on the show, and he was a super cool guy. It was nice.
Yeah, we regret not getting a chance to. He was at that same Comic-Con the other guys were at, and we missed that one.
Yeah.
Yep.
So yeah, I don't know. I think Marvel might take the the edge on that a little bit. It's interesting. Both Marvel and DC, like when you talk about, like, because it's hard because DC has like the New Gods, Marvel has Celestials, but both Marvel and DC have a character that represents God. I forget which is which. One of them is the One Above All, and the other is, what is the other one? See, how can I not? So there's One Above All, that's Marvel.
Yeah.
And that's basically God, or it represents Stan Lee or Jack Kirby or, you know, whatever. And then the presence. It's the presence in DC. So there we go. I knew it was the one above all and the presence. You know, the idea is that even amongst all this, there has to be one infinite creator of everything.
Which both of those names are like, because the presence kind of sounds like he who is, you know, right. Like just.
Or the bread of the presence.
I like one above all because you think about God, he's a maximally great being. There's nothing greater than
God. Right, right. So they're both accurate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the presence kind of feels a bit more Catholic to me, maybe. I don't know. Because
from a philosophical theology, I like one above all. But
really? Because I was thinking, like, as Catholics, we see God as both above all, but also so near.
Yeah.
You know, at the same time. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sure.
So
I feel like a lot of things could have a presence, but there's only one that is one.
That's
above
true.
All.
Yeah. That's true. You're right. But together.
Sure.
Dun, dun, dun.
They work really great.
Yeah. Yeah. Crossover.
Yeah.
So I would argue that DC, you know, maybe if we start with Superman, the Siegel and Schuster, they a somewhat more Jewish conception of their world. Superman, obviously, very Moses-like and being set adrift in the universe. And so even though Stan Lee is Jewish, I would.
Oh, yeah. Well, the creators of Superman, yeah, it was two Siegel and Schuster. They're two, they're both Jewish. So it totally makes sense.
And Lex Luthor was, I think, taken from a magazine about the Ubermensch. You know, yeah. It was. But, you know, then on the other side, you have Magneto, you know, as a Holocaust survivor. I love the Jewish roots of both
X-Men, especially. It is very poignant in that it talks about, you know, how human beings are cruel to those who are different. And so I do appreciate that and the elements and the fact that Magneto and Professor X are paralleled to Martin Luther King Jr. and Malcolm X, that both of them have valid points in their struggle for civil rights, that both, you know, they both make valid points in their different approaches. So I do appreciate that more relatable social commentary in the comics.
I think that's why X-Men is my favorite, like by far. I love X-Men. The movies obviously aren't as good as the rest of the MCU.
It's not. Well, they got to give credit.
X-Men. You got to give credit where credit's due. They were like kicking it off before it was even kicked off.
We won't talk about Blade, but you know, after Blade,
correct.
Which is good, but it was that started the ball rolling was them. And X2 is a super good movie.
Oh, yeah. I enjoyed them all. Like I'll go back and watch them at least once a year.
Right? I can't watch X3.
I do it just to get through it.
X-Men the animated series is still the best version of the Phoenix Saga that we have.
Oh yeah.
Absolutely. Oh, by
no
far.
Doubt. No
by
doubt.
Far. The Phoenix Saga is, I back in high school I got the digital version of the first 40 years of X-Men, and I loved it. I just kind of breezed right through it. And the Phoenix Saga is incredible. And so I was really angry whenever they messed it up. Not once.
They messed it up twice.
But twice. Yeah.
Twice. They still
kind of
get
the
it
the same
right.
way, didn't they? Like, it's kind of similar.
Yeah, she kills Professor X versus killing.
Because that was, what was that? What was the name of that recent one? They had the girl from Game of Thrones and they did it.
Oh,
was that? That wasn't Apocalypse, was it?
No.
It
was, no.
I thought of, I liked
it. Or is
Apocalypse,
it just Phoenix?
So.
Or what was I?
I thought it was Phoenix or something like that.
I can't even remember what it was called. I didn't go see it. Once again, I can't waste my time on bad movies. What made that movie even worse was they reshot and redid the whole third act because the original plan was for the Phoenix to go in space and destroy all the alien ships from the Shi'ar. What was the Shi'ar? It was just whoever. And then they realize, oh, never mind. Captain Marvel already did it. So we'll put him on a train. I'm like, oh, come on.
See, and that's like Phoenix.
Dark Phoenix.
Dark Phoenix. That's what it was called. Dark Phoenix. Phoenix is such a powerful character in the comics, like just incredibly powerful. And I actually enjoy it. So you mentioned Captain Marvel. So I love the Captain Marvel comics. I think Carol Danvers is an incredible character. I cannot.
They did a good job with her in. I liked her little appearance in What If. When she asked,
that's Captain Marvel.
Yeah, like let's see you just punch a super powerful guy into the center of a planet,
and then make some kind of smart A remark, right?
Yeah, that's good. It's just like, oh, you had to make it. You had to have Brie Larson and all her nonsense.
Right.
And it's just what I am just sick of is just this idea, like, just because you don't like strong female protagonists. Oh, that's what you don't. That's what you don't like.
We loved Wonder Woman.
I like one. Well, you only like female protagonists that are the male gaze. Of course you love Wonder Woman. My wife would say that. Of course you love Wonder Woman. I remember on Father's Day when it came out, I told her, oh, me and the guys are going to go see a superhero movie. She's like, okay. I'm like, oh, I went and saw Wonder Woman. She's like, what? You went and saw Wonder Woman? I'm like, well, it's a superhero movie. Yeah. But no, it doesn't, like, I'll give you an example, like Ripley from Aliens or Sarah Connor in Terminator. They're not like a stereotypical model or anything like that, but they are a very strong, relatable female protagonist.
And Sigourney Weaver's like very motherly in Aliens.
Yes. So she's feminine, but without, it's not like stereotypical,
it's not weak sauce feminine.
No, it's not
strong.
It's like it's kind of like, I see this sometimes in the Catholic world, and I worry about this, that some Catholic speakers and personalities, like, they get obsessed with like talking about masculinity all the time. Like, what does it mean to be a Catholic man? And here's, I'm smoking my cigars and I'm doing all this and I'm being manly. You know what? Actually, when you're masculine, you don't have to talk about that. I think somebody asked me once, like, what do you do to develop your masculinity? I'm like, nothing.
I be a man.
I'm just a man and I live my life. I'm a good father and husband. I'm not so worried about it. I have to project it all the time because I'm quite calm. And so I see, like, in these movies, you have the character, the female protagonist, who's worried about being feminine in the political correct way. They become Mary Sues. That's the problem. That it's like, oh, well, we can't have, like, it's weird in Captain Marvel. It's like her flaw is supposed to be like she's too emotional. But then it's like, when
the wrong actress for that.
Right. But then, like, when in the movie she's wooden throughout the entire thing.
Yeah.
It's like you couldn't actually show her getting emotional and crying about something because then, oh, she's a stereotypical emotional woman. Mm-hmm. So then there's like this weird thing you have in modern movies. You have a female protagonist and she has to be perfect because if she had a flaw, then that would be, oh, you're stereotyping women. No, that's why Wonder Woman works, because her flaw is naivety. That is her flaw in Wonder Woman. She's naive. And they blew that in the last act of Wonder Woman is great until the third act. And then it's just another forgettable CGI fight. And she defeats Ares, whatever his name is.
Throwing tanks around or whatever.
Yeah. And she defeats him because she's the whole time she's like, it's Ares. She has a weird Israeli accent. It's supposed to be like Themyscira. It is Ares. He's controlling them to fight each other and I have to stop him. And it's like, no. There's just bad people. And it's like, actually, World War II was caused by the darkness in human hearts. There's good people and bad people. And then she beats them up and all the guys like seem like they're good now, like the Germans or whatever. I was like, what? the whole point was that she got duped because she's naive about these things. Mm-hmm. And that's a good weakness. And then you drop the ball. But it made it further than other DC movies. So
and speaking of great female actresses in Marvel, that would be the only reason Spider-Man is not relatable, is because Aunt May is Marissa Tomei. That's right. Not fair. You know, that's, Aunt May's not a geriatric anymore.
I know, right? I love that they play that for jokes. They're just like, oh, hi, Aunt May. I give them credit.
Should we say that it was Aunt May?
What?
Not that.
That's my cousin.
Scott hasn't seen Spider-Man No Way Home yet.
Oh, yeah. Don't.
What?
Yeah. That's it.
Right?
I didn't see it before Exodus 90
I'm glad
started.
You said that. Because I mean, I was
drop all the spoilers. He has.
Oh, yeah. This is on you. I'm sorry.
I'm just kidding.
No, I'll be good.
He's but trying to blame Exodus 90, but.
Yeah, I'm completely pulling my Exodus 90 blame card on that.
Without spoilers, No Way Home is a great movie because in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, that is the first time we see Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. That is the first time we see Spider-Man.
Not Spider-Boy,
not Spider high school Pigo. Student.
Or Spider-Pig.
Yeah, right.
Spider-Pig.
He's Spider. You don't get that till the end of the film, really. But it's like, this is Spider-Man. Very good. And that's where it's done right in that regard.
Yeah.
Which actually, because I haven't seen it either. I haven't seen it either, but it kind of pulls back to we just watched Far From Home. And that's like part of the theme in that movie too, is he's not confident in himself.
No.
Right.
No.
Like he falls prey to someone else convincing him that they're more worthy of the gift that Tony.
He didn't even try to convince him. He just sort of convinced himself and then was like, here, take.
I'm pretty sure Taylor Swift wrote a song about Mysterio doing that to Spider-Man.
Right.
There was Jake Gyllenhaal, right? I'm not.
Yeah, Jake Gyllenhaal.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Is it Gyllenhaal?
I think it's Gyllenhaal.
I've
there's like a
Gyllenhaal.
Video online. Like, how is your last name pronounced? It's Gyllenhaal.
It's Homer Hickam.
Right.
That's right. Gyllenhaal
he should have stopped it at October Sky.
Mm-hmm.
So should Laura Dern. But anyway, that's a Star Wars reference.
One last thing with the femininity thing was that I, as a woman, felt like that scene in Endgame where all the women just kind of stop what they're doing and all come together. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah.
Where I was like,
women Avengers,
she's
assemble.
Got help.
To me, it was like, this is so offensive because a woman can't handle it unless all the other women just stop fighting and band around her collectively and defend her. Like,
I mean, I'll give them it's a cool scene. I'll give them that. But you're right. It's like,
it just felt forced.
It felt a little forced.
Yeah.
But
and
at least
that was the toned down version because people thought
it was
the
toned down version.
Oh,
but
gosh.
Like,
wasn't gonna be.
Like, how did they all end up in the same spot during this huge battle?
Unoccupied.
And they just all stopped doing what they were doing and just, hey, let's go do this instead.
Yeah, right. It was just forced.
And they were all free to do that. It was like,
it was like supposed to be female solidarity, but to me, it felt more like, I don't know. It felt more like that women need something that men don't, you know, that women need like a whole football team to get it done.
It's their intuition. They knew they needed.
They knew. You're right. You're right.
Yeah.
They're connected and they all knew.
They're
in sync.
Oh, in sync.
With each other.
Those are all basically girls too.
Oh, yeah. No. No. We don't diss NSYNC in this joint.
I wanted to see between DC and Marvel, the best rogues gallery, the weirdest villain. I wanted to see
sure.
I think DC is definitely going to have the weirdest villain if I had to.
Marvel's got some pretty weird ones out there.
I don't know. I mean, Thanos is basically just Planned Parenthood.
Man, in the comics, he went around in the special Thanos helicopter.
Did he?
He did.
The comics Thanos. Now, we have to acknowledge the comics Thanos is completely different from the MCU.
Oh, he's a joke. He's a joke in the comics.
Yeah.
They did a good job adapting it to make him actually...
And his motivation is different, right?
His motivation is completely
in the
different.
Comics. He tries to end all life to impress the personification of
Lady
Death.
Yeah, Mistress Death.
Yep, and it actually is a competition between him and I say it's a competition. They're both trying to impress Lady Death. It's him and
that guy.
I'm not. It's not Daredevil. It's the other one. Deadpool.
Deadpool.
Yeah.
which Deadpool. We haven't talked about at all.
Which we right. Yeah. So Deadpool.
Apparently Deadpool's a lapsed Catholic.
Well, I was going to say, I think Deadpool's the most Catholic movie of all. Yeah.
The second one in particular.
Oh, man. No. Yeah, I don't, the like best or weirdest rogues gallery. I don't know. There's so many iconic villains in each. I feel like the Edge, though, is going to have to go to, I might want to give it to DC. I don't know. But you have Lex Luthor. You have someone like Darkseid, who I think Darkseid is like a million times more menacing than Thanos.
I think Batman's rogues gallery.
I mean, just not, if you pick, if you pick a rogues gallery for one hero, like that is the most iconic rogues gallery to me. Like iconic. People can remember the Joker, Riddler, Two-Face, and they're all just weird and bizarre. And
I mean, but wouldn't the best rogues gallery actually be like Rogue?
Stop it.
The worst. What's hard about that, that's where X-Men, I almost wish they didn't have Rogue in the X-Men movies, because like she doesn't steal Captain Marvel's powers, she's just kind of a liability.
Quit touching people.
I mean, that's like, the hard thing. I could see you putting her on a fighting team, because I mean, if you trained her if you trained her in hand-to-hand combat and weapons, and you had a member of your team who can steal the powers of someone else, if you're fighting as a team, that is a good member to deploy. You'll need to give them protection. Mm-hmm. But the fact that they can disable the powers of another opponent, that's huge. But like, you know, it's like she's supposed to be the member of the team. And it's just like, I remember, I think it was like X3 or something, where like she's in the danger room and she like steals Colossus's powers so she doesn't get hurt. I'm like, that's not how you should be using the team.
Right.
Isn't she trying to do that to Apocalypse and gets fried?
Yeah, well, that happens in the comics too, when she tries to from certain people. She can't absorb it. But yeah, I don't know. I think probably the Batman Rogues Gallery. I don't know. It's almost Shakespearean. The people
I really do hope that's how they introduce Rogue into the Marvel universe, though. They reintroduce her by her taking Brie Larson's powers.
She puts Brie Larson in a coma. One can hope.
Fingers crossed.
One can hope.
Her out of business.
Right.
So if we were to do the weirdest DC villain, we had talked about Mitzplick or whatever his name is.
Oh, Mr. Mixius Bitlick, the fifth dimensional imp that tortures Superman.
And is that the one that Superman has to say his name backwards?
Yes. There is a great run called Emperor Joker. Or it's like, I think it's Emperor Joker. And that's a great one to show like the crazy bad guys. Yeah. In it, the Joker, so Mr. Mixius Bitlick is a fifth dimensional being. So he has almost reality warping powers. It's almost godlike what he can do, that he can change things, manipulate reality. And Superman has to trick him.
He basically did what Wanda did to herself. Yeah.
Basically, he can just do that. And he's a trickster more. And so if Superman says his name backwards, it sends him back to the fifth dimension. And so he's always having to do that. In Emperor Joker, Mitzius Bitlick gets tired of teasing Superman and goes after the Joker. But the Joker tricks Mitzius Bitlick into saying his secret fifth dimensional or imp name. And that allows, like, he was planning, Mitzius Bitlick's plan was to give the Joker 1% of his powers to see, like, what craziness the Joker would do. But the Joker tricks him into keeping 1% of his powers and giving 99% of them to the Joker.
Oh, wow.
And so then the comic series opens with Superman in prison, and he has no idea what's going on. And he keeps escaping. And Bizarro always finds him and puts him back in prison. And he's like, what in the world is going on? And it turns out the Joker, he just kills Batman every day because he can. And he does whatever he wants. And Superman's trying to find a way to team up with Mixus Spitlick to resolve this. But the Joker does crazy stuff. Like, he just decides to eat all the people of China in a giant Chinese food box just because he can.
That's what I can't get with DC, is it all just feels kind of demented, crazy. I don't know.
I like when it gets over the top.
I think it's a personality thing. That's not my personality.
thing about Marvel. Marvel, you're like, what's more Catholic? Someone asked me this in an episode recently on a live stream. Like, is it okay that Dr. Doom uses the nails from Christ's crucifixion in his armor to fight vampires? You know, it's like that's over the top too. I'm like, well,
yeah,
you're recognizing that he's
well, Kitty Pryde, who always wears the Star of David, used that to repel Dracula, I think, at some point, which that's a little bit of a stretch maybe, but is because she had this authentic, genuine faith.
Right. That they're acknowledging like the legitimacy on some level of
the power of faith.
Of these things. Power.
Yeah.
And I mean, I feel like the MCU has gotten away from really any religious themes since, or not maybe themes, but like any overtly religious lines or people since that line in the first Avengers movie about there's only one God and he doesn't dress like that.
I know, I love that line. And that's the end of that. But
yeah, but there's like an abundance of pro-life lines. Like, I'm on the side of life, you know.
We don't trade in lives.
Yeah, we don't trade in lives. Like, there's a million. I mean, I guess not a million. There's a bunch of pro-life lines.
Thank you for nerding out with us, the Catholic Nerds. This has been Scott Smith.
Mary Reed.
Cody Reed.
Colby Allen.
And Trent Horn.
If you liked today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit TrentHornPodcast.com.